dbkmediaservices.com.
You are listening to the SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into SVC Sports Talk. My name is Bruce Knox. I'll get around to introducing the other two gentlemen in just a moment, but first, we want to tell you you're listening to show number 296. This is our 10th season of SVC Sports Talk, and this is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and all the things on the website. We want to say hello again to John Bruce. John, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing, Bruce?
Doing very well. Christmas is sneaking up on us, believe it or not. We were talking about that before we started taping this evening. We're taping on a Sunday night, the 13th, but can't believe it, but it's just around the bend, trying to get the season in, aren't we?
Yeah, we've had pretty decent luck. My team's had a little less luck of it this weekend with had a couple of our contests canceled in the lower levels, but overall it feels like, you know, we've been pretty fortunate. I had a couple kids quarantined this week, but besides that, after the season started, we've been pretty fortunate. Hopefully we can keep it going. Christmas coming up, and hopefully 2021 is a much different year than 2020, because I don't want to repeat it this one.
No, none of us do. And I was just thinking maybe a year from now, we can listen to some of these shows and say, man, we were talking an awful lot about quarantine and different things like that. And this year, we don't have to think about that. That would be wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Would be.
Say hello also to Shane Combs. Mr. Combs, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing really well, guys. Excited to start the show this week. I wanted to do so, if you guys don't mind, with a shout out to Gary Kello. His 500th win last night. You know, we're recording here on a Sunday. On Saturday night, he wins number 500. And that number alone speaks for itself. I think, John, that the longer I coach, when I hear these types of milestones, we've talked a little bit about Laura Smith and volleyball, and you know, when I come up on these milestones, it's the longevity,
yes,
and the consistency, I think, are the two words that come to my mind. I mean, when I think back with Coach Kello, I'm about 30 plus years into a relationship that's really dynamic, because I mean, I'm talking all the way back in the like junior high as a manager, and then becoming a high school player, and being in a time where, you know, the Zane Trace rivalry was at its peak at that time, and so the relationship started out in a rivalry situation, and then I, you know, in the young adult, I'm assistant coach for 6 or 7 years. I'm a head coach against him for a couple of years. I get kind of into media, JJ Huddle, SVC Sports Zone, just get to know him a little bit more on an adult level, a coaching level. I know some of my favorite Coach Kello moments have come later in my coaching career, when I had a chance. I remember specifically one time, about a half hour conversation I had with him down at the convo, where we just kind of talked basketball, and I picked his brain and talked defense. He's a fascinating guy to talk to defensive end with. You know, and again, over the years, it's been a competitive situation, but as time's gone on and I've got a chance to just sit back and get to know him a little bit more, It's just been a neat thing to get to talk basketball with him, and when you're in the profession like we are, John, I think I speak for you when I say this type of accomplishment it's an absolute commanding of respect, and I certainly have that for Coach Kello. I wanted to give you a chance in the opening to comment as well.
Yeah, I mean, first off, it's unbelievable. So congratulations to Coach Kello on that. It says a lot about longevity and just the fact that he wins, you know, and that's what he does. I remember a couple years ago, I believe it was down It was definitely down at Waverly. I think we were watching Piketon, and I was up covering with SEC Sports Zone, and he was up there, and he was just scouting, and we sat up there and we watched the whole game together and just talked and just talked basketball. He talked about his grandkids, and you know, you could just tell how much he was enjoying being back at Zane Trace after being gone for a while. And you know, that was the first time I really got a chance to sit down and talk with him, which was really nice because he just, you know, like you mentioned, loves basketball, really fascinating guy. And that's something I'll always remember, and really made that a really fun evening for me. And once again, you know, congratulations. It's just unfathomable to think about, you know, 500 wins. It's just an amazing accomplishment.
Shane, there aren't too many guys in the 500 win column in basketball in the high school, is there in Ohio?
Well, you know, and I probably need John's better at that stuff than I am. I probably need to look that up a little bit, but I know in this particular area, you're talking about, you know, one hand, John, I assume, depending on how far you want to stretch the area out.
I don't know if Tom Barrick from Wittsburg got there, but I know obviously Norm Pearson, who's at
Norm, right?
Yeah, Larry Jordan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know if Van Meter got there, but because you think about it, it goes to a longevity thing on some of those things. I think I can't think of his name offhand. That down at God Bless, who was there for so long, was I think he got there.
Coach Caldwell.
Yeah.
He's down in that area in the TVC area still. Yeah. So I mean, it's a pretty elite club to say the least. And I think what jumps out at me too, Bruce, you know, think about all the things we talk about in our podcasting and our website stuff and our media, and you've talked about how technology's changed things. Well, in coaching, it's kind of the same way. The game's changed so much in the last 35 years. And what's neat about Coach Kello is now that I'm a coach and I look back at certain things, there's so many things on the offensive end he's adapted to and he's changed, but he still has his non-negotiables. I mean, he still has his attention to detail on the defensive end. And John, the way I would even say, I think one of the most overlooked parts of defense is shot selection and efficiency. And mm-hmm. he has a couple non-negotiables that just, no matter how much he's adapted to certain things, he's had some really special, I mean, obviously when you win 500 games, you've coached a few good players. But he has such an identity of exactly who he wants to be. And it's really neat how he's taken so many different types of teams and been able to blend them into that particular system.
Mm-hmm.
He is an amazing individual, and we certainly do want to pass along our congratulations from SVC Sports Talk and from SVC Sports Zone. So congratulations on number 500, Coach. Shane, otherwise, what's on the agenda for this week?
Well, as always, I think the agenda will be set up in some segments here, and we'll use our sponsorship to drive the show. We're so appreciative of all the support, Advanced Services, what they've done to support the show, and the website's really appreciated. Pickaway Ross Career and Technology Center, they're working with the high school kids and the vocational work, as well as the adult programs, some really, really good programs. And then North Fork Animal Clinic, appreciate Blake and all the support there. And so throughout the show, we'll have Bruce pass out some better information on each of our sponsors, and throughout, I think we're going to look at kind of a weird schedule to kind of get started here this week. I know kind of have a little four quarter segment for boys, four quarter segment for girls, where we've had four things, had a lot of fan feedback this week, either through small emails or a text here or there, where people would be like, hey, don't really have a specific question, but like, here's a comment or here's a thought for the show. I always appreciate those because it's just kind of gets me thinking a little bit. So I've kind of put those into some situations, and then we'll close it out with looking at how school is changing things this year in terms of the remote learning and some of the flex schedules and some different things, and what challenges we think our student athletes and the overall coaching is going through with that. So That just kind of gives you an overview. Again, thank you, North Fork Animal Clinic, Advanced Services, and Pickaway, Ross Career and Technology Center. Appreciate all the support. So, you know, Bruce, on that thought, I'll kind of turn it over to you and let you go whatever direction you think we need to go first.
All right. Well, you mentioned the weird scheduling this past week for the girls, and then the boys are starting league play. I just kind of wondered, guys, what's something you've learned about the 2021 basketball season already, given this weird predicament we find ourselves in?
Well, John, I think when I look at it first, I guess I would even explain the weird schedule. I think we should probably take a look at the higher levels of sports, you know, with high states going through in Big Ten football and, you know, in college football, how some people are playing 10, 11 games, some are struggling to play three or four. And it's, no matter how much you want to ignore it, no matter how much you want to kind of look past and so forth, it's just there. It's a reality. And it's a domino effect. I know this week in girls, you get some situations where, I know the morning of, you kind of get word Southeastern Paint Valley game's not going to happen. And then, you know, Southeastern goes on a quarantine, Piketon goes on the quarantine. That impacts a couple opponents that night. That impacts a couple opponents for Thursday. So it's just kind of where you're at. I know in the boys' situation, we'll talk a little bit about Southeastern and the weekend they went through and, you know, how things should be handled. So to me, John, I guess my answer to that would be, look, COVID's a factor. And it's just going to be there, and it's going to be a domino effect, and it's just something you have to be aware of. And I think it truly puts the cliche of getting better every practice, coaching day to day, coaching every kid as hard as you can, but then also, you know, caring for each kid and making sure that they're right and they and their family have what they need and so forth. I think it's just that's what I've really learned here in the early going, because let's face it, we're not even a fourth of the way through this. And I think we have an idea of what we're in for.
Mm-hmm.
John.
Yeah, I completely agree. I would also add that to the people that like to make predictions, you probably just shouldn't do that for this year. Because you don't know who's going to be playing, what night people are going to be playing. Like when we went up and we played Worthington Christian a couple weeks ago, it was like we found out the day before, like, hey, you're playing up at Worthington Christian tomorrow. Like, oh, great. Okay, so let's go get ready. You know, it's just one of those things where it's like, well, it's you never know what's going to happen. So you have to always be open-minded, be prepared for anything, because like I said, it could be changed at any time. I was getting my practice plan ready, and I had seen that the Uniota Piketon game was off for that night. And so I was on my planning period, I went over to Coach Miller's office and asked him, I said, what are we doing practice wise? I said, because I had a sweet spot for my practice, and I was like, I really don't want to have to lose my practice time. So, you know, and luckily I was able to go at that same time and, you know, do my normal stuff. But it's just, you just never know what's going to happen, because it might not be anything that your school did, like with Piketon. It's nothing they did. They just went and played a team, and it's not like Southeastern planned for that to happen.
No,
you know, it's just that's the luck of what's going on right now. And just always have to be prepared.
Do you try to keep in mind that we're lucky to be playing, or is
exactly
that's it?
Really?
That's it.
Yeah.
I guess you gotta, you know, you gotta laugh to keep from crying, and you just gotta kind of look at the good thing is that we are attempting to have a season that really,
yeah. And, yeah, for us, on Friday night, Mike White said to me, he said, hey, just so you know, Piketon might not be able to play might not be able to play JV at all tomorrow. I was like, okay. He just said, you know, be prepared, because I knew they had some quarantine on the boys' side too. And I guess in a way, luckily for them, it just happened to be with their JV instead of their varsity. But then I heard on the scoreboard show on Friday night that Piketon was going to plan on playing a half. Mm-hmm. So I let my kids No, since I'm doing freshman and JV and we weren't having freshman games, I was bringing the freshman kids along and I was like, hey guys, you know, this is what's going to happen tomorrow. And like a couple of kids were like, man, it's just, it's kind of rough. You know, we want to play a full game. And then one of the kids in the group text was like, hey, let's just go take care of business. You know, we get a chance to play, let's go do it. And so it's just, if you look at it in a positive way, you know, you're not going to get yourself really far, you know, kind of far behind, like mentally on this whole thing is just knowing that we're getting a chance to do it. So, you know, Saturday morning found out that they weren't actually going to be able to play it, or I don't know the full circumstances, but I know we're going to try to play it at a later time. But it was just, you know, even then, one of the kids that dresses varsity that plays for me, we were at the shoot around Saturday morning. He was like, man, I wanted to play tonight. I was like, well, you know, it's one of those things. We'll look to make it up. It's just, you know,
cherish the time you've got here in the gym right now.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hard to keep that, you know, mentality, but you just got to at this point in time. So, mm-hmm. All right, guys. Well, as we move along here, I want to thank again North Fork Animal Clinic Boarding and Grooming for their continued support of the podcast. Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff located at their offices on 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe. You can give them a call at 740-773-7387, and you can always look up their information, more of it, including a picture of Dr. Lloyd himself there on NorthForkAnimalClinic.com. That's North Fork Animal Clinic Boarding and Grooming, taking care of all your small pet needs. All right, we're going to keep this segment here in the boys' realm, if you will. And we've got, as Shane kind of tipped earlier, about four different things that kind of came in, just ideas, if nothing else, about things to talk about. So we're going to kind of just bat these back and forth, if you will, guys. First, I'd like for you to comment about the tradition of Zane Trace. We talked a little bit about Coach Kello. They're off to a 2-0 start in league play. So you kind of already mentioned this, Shane, a little bit, the tradition of Zane Trace. But either one of you want to tip off with that?
Well, John, I'll just start by saying I think it's not just a 2-0 start, you know. Okay, it's not just beating a Paint Valley Huntington at home to start 2-0. I think it's been the progression of Zane Trace over the last 2 weeks, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. They started out a little bit sluggish on the road there with McLean. Sounds like they're very competitive with Farrell, and I did not see that game. I watched the McLean game, and then I watched the Vinton County game, and I thought their fourth quarter of the Vinton County game, they were down one going into the fourth quarter of that game, and I thought that was a little bit of a turning point for this young basketball team. And it wasn't just going 2-0 over the weekend. It was the way they just kind of controlled start to finish. It was the number of kids. I mean, obviously Naylon Robinson's off to a really good start, but you know, Stone Rock and Nichols and Miller have given some minutes. But when you go down through the book, I know I was looking at their scorebook the other night from their Saturday night win, and I mean they're getting about 10, 11 people, John, contributing in a pretty serious mm-hmm. way. You know, and I know sometimes some of those things come later in the game, it's a score bin, but I'm saying that even in the first and second quarters of very competitive games, they're getting a lot of contribution. So I know they're young. I know that there's a lot of teams that felt like they could really push to pass them, but you almost get the sense when you watch Zane Trace that they're almost like loving the fact that, oh, you mean we get to step back and kind of have the bullseye off us for a second? Go ahead and talk about those top three teams up there, and we'll just keep getting better and better and better, and we'll just kind of linger here a little bit. It's just there is a, you know, again, I don't want to make too much of one weekend, but don't you kind of sense like, hey, this team's getting better all the time. They might be a little bit more dangerous than people are giving them credit for.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, I think a lot of people didn't, think much of them coming into it, because, you know, maybe not having the summer on top of the fact, obviously, they graduated, all the numbers that they did from last year, all the accomplished players, and really only Robinson played much. Nichols played a little bit here and there, but for the most part, they didn't have any varsity experience. But they practiced together every night, JV and varsity. So those JV guys that are now playing varsity went against Colby Swain, Cam Evans, Nesser, right. Davidson, Johnson in practice every night. So they're already, they're used to kind of what it takes to compete in a varsity practice. Playing practice and games are different, obviously, but they won the JV league last year. They practiced against those guys. So they were prepared, they go down to McLean, and like you said, they were sluggish, didn't look very good. But at the same time, like you mentioned, they just kept rolling out different guys, a bunch of different guys who have won. They've won at every level. So it's just you got a bunch of kids who know how to win, that have high expectations for themselves, even if other people don't. And they know what to do to win. And then you throw in, a coach that's won 500 games.
There you go.
Oh, then you bring in Pat Beard, who, as an assistant coach, who is, he won a lot of games with the Chillicothe girls basketball, but he's also been on a lot of really good coaching staffs on the boys side too. So not only do you have the 500 game winner as your head coach, you have this elite assistant coach as well. So they're getting really good teaching. So, I thought it would take them a little longer. I thought by the second half of the year is when they would really, start to make a lot of noise in the league. But man, it was a really impressive start. Getting some distance from Paint Valley pretty much that entire game. And that win against Vinton County was big, because that probably showed them, hey, we know what to do to win now, after they hung with Fairland for most of that game. And they'll have another big test this weekend coming up with a couple more games, but they're just watching those kids and how they prepare and everything, I can't imagine them being scared of anybody. So they're going to go in with a ton of confidence, and they're going to compete.
John, real quick, I don't want to get too far off topic, because we have a lot of good things to get to tonight, but a lot of this stuff's happened at home over the last week or whatever, but how difficult, under the current circumstance, how difficult do you think it's going to be to play on the road in comparison to years past?
I don't know. It's different. I mean, just because it's going to be a different kind of
setup. It's certainly different. Yeah. I mean, to say it's not different, you're right. Not. Yeah. I mean, it's compared to some of these atmospheres that you can play in sometimes, it's certainly different.
Yeah. It's definitely different. But like last night when we played Piketon, I went out. It was when the teams ran out. I'm coming out of the locker room and everything. And you could just hear the crowd still sounded pretty loud. The home crowds are still going to get to the game, even if there's hardly anybody there, because, they're going to be into the game. It's just, it is different. You're getting dressed in a different locker room. You're riding the bus and everything. So that part's the same, but it's definitely, probably not as intimidating to play at some places because of the lack of crowd. And it could make, I still think it'll be difficult to play on the road, but probably not as difficult this year.
Anyway, just something, Bruce, maybe for sure. Us to kind of keep our eye on here in the next week or two, when, because the league schedule has some weird unbalanced factor to it, home and away. Mm-hmm. So some different teams are going to go through long stretches at home and away for whatever reason. So that's just something to keep our eye on.
All right. The next topic that came up was Southeastern situation. And one fan wanted to know if it was fair for them to have to play this past weekend with, I think you said, six varsity players quarantined, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Well, John, you want that one first?
I understand the question. The part where I say, it probably is fair is because I believe that that's just kind of the league rule, and that's what's going to happen. If, you know, it's unfortunate that it happened, but I think if it happens to St. Trace, Unieta, Pike, to any of those schools, it's as long as they have enough to play, they're going to play. You know, and that's why also when I kind of talked about that, nope, you can't make predictions. It's just kind of, you know, up in the air. It's you never know what's going to happen this year because who knows who you're going to have and who you're going to play against. So, and big credit for Southeastern on Saturday to really beat in that game. And I really like the Allman kid too. You mentioned Wheeler and Eastep. I think the Allman kid's going to be a really nice piece for the Panthers. So, I mean, it's unfortunate, but I do think it's fair just because of, you know, that's what we expected out of the rest of the league as well this year.
Yeah, if I understand the rule, Bruce, I think what the league settled on, and I, if I'm wrong, hopefully a coach or administrator listening will correct me on this. When the whole thing started here a couple of weeks back, I think we decided if a high school program had 8 kids available, that they would play the varsity game. Okay. And, you know, that's kind of where you're at. I mean, it's just the time we said it in the opening, you know what I mean? It's extremely unfortunate. I do think Saturday night was very telling, though. I think, you know, Friday night, obviously they're going to be far more than competitive than that, but the Dean of the game, they're going to have trouble winning, you know, when you consider that matchup. But like Saturday night, had a chance to see them play Paint Valley. And I was just thoroughly impressed with Wheeler and Eastep and their ability. And again, obviously their younger kids stepping in and playing on that stage is incredible. But I thought it was a showcase for me to see Wheeler and Eastep shot making down the stretch in that game. They just wouldn't go away. Mm-hmm. And they really had opportunities. Finally, Trent Mettler stepped to the line, hit 2 free throws to put it away for Paint Valley. And, you know, Eastep and Grubb had nice games there for Paint Valley as well. But, like, I'm just telling you that Southeastern was there all night and had their opportunity. So I think they'll grow from it. Certainly one Saturday night, they probably wish they could have been at full strength. But in terms of fair, I thought John said, well, I understand the question. It's just kind of where we're at. They probably won't be the last team to have to go through it, obviously. And again, it's just where you're going to have to be ready to adjust on the fly and go with it.
Yep. It's going to be, as we've been talking about, you know, in the background of everything we've talked about has been the quarantine situations, the COVID and so forth. Is this season going to have an asterisk beside it forever?
Well, I think in terms of unique storyline, yes. But in terms of results, I think winning is so hard. I think that would be awfully unfair. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, John. I just, you know, winning and winning championships and doing those things is so hard that I think sometimes when we use the asterisk in professional sports or in high school sports, whatever, to me, that's a little unfair in terms of the team that goes ahead and accomplishes whatever it is they accomplish.
I guess they've all done it underneath the same situation, like you said.
Yes. Right, yeah. Okay. That's what I was going to say. It's just because it's the same for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, I do think that when you look at some of the teams' record books and stuff, it's going to be kind of different because some teams are going to play a lot more games than others. And
right.
Like Chillicothe isn't playing until January. So how many games are they realistically going to get in? So even without an asterisk, if they go through and play 14, 15 games and you're like, well, that's kind of weird. But then you look at the year and you're like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So,
well, Bruce, the better question here in a couple of weeks might be, how's the league going to handle a team that plays 14 games compared to a team that plays 10? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? In terms of like the Big Ten football is going through right now and so forth. So we certainly have some administration questions ahead of us. But in terms of the asterisk part of it, you know, that's kind of where I would stand on that right now.
All right. A third topic that came up this week, of course, being Edina with their 2-0 start. And, of course, Logan Bennett scoring his 100th career point. Why don't you comment on that?
It was 1,000.
Not 1,000th. Yes. I'm sorry.
Yes. Not 100.
I've got 1,000 written down. Yeah. 100 would have been just a couple games.
Go ahead. You go ahead and comment there on Logan and Adina, and then I wanted to follow up with a comment. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's awesome accomplishment for Logan. He's a great kid. Really cool kid to just sit down and talk to. He was somebody who got to know a little bit through certain situations with outside of sports. It's really cool to see him accomplish something like that, especially early in his senior year. I know how much work he's put into just overall being a better athlete, and he's got a really unique skill set for the league with his ability to go inside and outside. He's long. He can do a lot of really effective things that really – change the way a game has to be played, how you scout and how you prepare for a player like him. And there's all kinds of different ways to do it with him. And he's a really special player in the league. And so congratulations to him. And then if you want to add anything before we talk about the rest of the team.
Well, yeah, I'll just talk about the accomplishment of the 1,000 points. Again, we talked consistency earlier. I think that's what jumps out at me is, from day one, he's someone that's been pretty consistent in terms of his production. His teams have gotten better and better. They've won at a high level, and I know their expectations are sky high this year. But he's an extremely talented kid. He's a tough matchup, that versatility inside out. And I'm happy for him. And as always, we'll highlight him on our 1,000 point page. One of the real cool things we do on our website, we'll take him up the all-time Adina and the all-time SVC list the entire year. So congratulations to Logan Bennett. And John, I'll let you kind of return to you and kind of talk Adina's 2-0 start, and then I'll kind of fill in there as well.
Yeah, their team is kind of, I don't want to say kind of, their team's a matchup nightmare, especially in our league, because they've got guys that can do it in a variety of different ways. Preston Sykes going 8-for-8 from the field and 4-for-4 from the line on Saturday. It's just a real casual 21 points on 8 shots. You don't see that real often. He's evolved as a player, and we've known that he's just a special athlete and competitor. But they're a tough matchup because Throckmorton, not a great shooter, but can hurt you in a lot of different ways, and he's one of those really tough, hard nosed kids that is going to find a way to get it done. Garrison, like we've talked about the last couple of weeks, has came along as a player and, looks to be healthy. And if he can get back to his sophomore year, just overall ability, that just makes them even harder to deal with. I mean, Saturday night, Logan Bennett didn't score, and they still win easily. It's just like that's how good of a team, they overall are, and that's not even mentioned Dylan McDonald, a junior who kind of goes along with the rest of those seniors that can, score in a bevy of ways, and he's one who's really worked hard at his game, and you can tell it pays off for him, and that's another big spot for them to just keep building up other guys to give them a chance when they have a player that goes down with an injury or gets in foul trouble. And that gives them a lot of different ways to attack you. They're just such a tough matchup because just how long they are, their style, they're going to be a headache for everybody in the league this year.
The thing that jumps out at me there, Bruce, is he's mentioned some of their elite players, so I won't be repetitive. I want to go to another point I had that's really, really important here. I talked about it on our preview show. Remember, I talked about efficiency, and I talked about he mentioned Dylan McDonald and Jarrett Garrison, I think, were two kids that I really, really highlighted on the preview show, and I talked about, well, and again, I know it's a short sample size, but here early in the year, Garrison's averaging – about, you know, 11 a game. Dylan McDonald's averaging 9 a game. But listen to some of these numbers here. This is what's so impressive, is McDonald is averaging 9 a game to go along with these big-time, you know, older players. But he's doing it on 83% shooting at the free throw line. He's shooting 68% from the floor, 44% from three. Well, Garrison's shooting 50% from three, 47% overall. He's shooting 70% from the free throw line. So what that tells you is, you know, Bennett and Sykes and so forth can get theirs throughout the flow of their offense the way you'd want your go-to guys to get it. But then the secondary scorers are saying, look, when I get my opportunity, I'm going to make the defense pay. So it's exactly what John's talking about from an opposing coach, is you're sitting there trying to figure out how to guard a Bennett. You're sitting, how do I guard Sykes? And then every time you overhelp, or every time you break down away from the ball, there's people, the ball's finding someone who can punish you. And that's the factor right now that really jumps out at me. So they're a team that has a ton of experience. They're big game tested. That's something to really keep your eye on, because, again, I know it's early, but that's something that's been really impressive to me in the early going.
And Logan, I did not mean to slight you on your 1,000th career point. Yeah. So
Bruce trying to take 900 points away from
you. Yeah, do that. So
well, now he'll use that to go get another 900 this year.
Hey, am I scoreboard fodder? Yeah. Hey, I might be. Well, let's talk a little bit about Uniodo. 2-0 start also, thanks to an impressive second-half defensive effort against Piketon. Shane, you want to take this one since it hits a little close to home for Mr.
Absolutely.
Bruce?
Absolutely. Right. Look, early in the year, there's been some things on the offensive end I really like to see Uniodo sort out, and I've talked about that a little bit. But the one thing that I mentioned again on the preview show that jumped out at me about this team was their half court defense. There looks like, you know, you look out there and it looks like there's like eight of them out. They're long, they're athletic. Yeah. And it started for me the second quarter, Friday night even. Huntington played a really nice first quarter Friday night and did some nice things. And then the depth and the different people that come into the game. And I thought that whole game changed there on the defensive end. And then Saturday, the same way. Piketon came out, really shot the ball well. Chandler was a matchup issue and finishing around the rim and so forth. But then it's that period of time where when they lock down on you, they can really put together some spurts defensively that can really jumpstart them. And then, you know, obviously the offense got going in pieces. You always know what you're going to get from Little, and I thought Park was big the other night and so forth. But on the defensive end, it's the variety of athletes. You know, you've heard me mention Galloway and the way he can change shots around. Park size, he blocked a couple key shots the other night. I thought Deshaun Branson coming off the bench in both games, especially his ability to deny the wing and do some things. And then the quiet defender that I've heard a lot of people mention, John, that doesn't get enough credit, is the board. Mm-hmm. I think he does it so quietly away from the ball. There was some kids that were completely taken out of the Piketon offense the other night that when you really stop the film and really pay attention to what was going on, you really see some different things he does. And it's maybe not as flashy or is not as glamorous as the big-time block shot or the denial out in passing lane, but his technique is very sound, and he's mm-hmm. very intelligent. It's one thing, Bruce, to be a great defender that pressures the ball or can jump out and steal or block a shot. It's another thing to be a great team defender and understand your help side and understand your help recovery and understand scouting report of, okay, this guy can make that shot. This guy can't hurt us there as much, so I can cheat this way a little bit. And it's just kind of, as a coach, fun to watch. So the Uniodo defensive end is what's going to give them a chance every single night. Now, as I said before, it's going to put them in some situations like the Miami Trace game where you think they're dominating a game for a while and they're not able to put a team away. Mm-hmm. But again, when you defend at that type of level, you're going to be there. You're going to be there every night for sure.
All righty, John, I imagine you want to take the fifth on this. Is that correct?
Well, I was just going to throw out there that we didn't play very good defense those first quarters this weekend, and then we gave up 20 points and 19 the last three quarters of both games. And it sometimes takes a little time to sort out, and then when it does, man, they can really lock teams down. It's just because, you know, there are a lot of smart kids that really buy into the scouting report, and like you mentioned, Shane, with that, is just knowing what ways the other team can affect you and hurt you, and taking that away, and then, you know, then on top of it being super long and athletic, that helps as well.
Yeah, but see, John, too, yeah. I don't think it's coincident that the second quarter a lot of times is where the depth starts to play. Mm-hmm. Because these other teams don't always have the ability to go 6-7-8. You see what I'm right. saying? These yeah. other teams, and they certainly don't have the ability to go defensively off the bench at that level. So I think what you're saying is certainly right about the first quarter, and some credit has to go to the opponent there. But like,
yes.
I also think the depth becomes a huge factor in terms of the way you're able to just throw a fresh body in there and to do some different things there with some people off the bench. Is the Sean number has just been, yeah. he's an impressive young man athletically.
Oh yeah. And well, then you mentioned Cam DeBoard, and then, you know, you bring in Carson, who's the right-handed version of him. Thankfully he's back now, and, you know, it's Deshaun, junior class president Deshaun Branson, you know, coming in off the bench, and he can do so many little things. But yeah, he's definitely a pretty cool kid all around.
All right, gentlemen, some good comments there about the boys' side. We're going to go next to the girls' side. First mention of Pickway Ross Career and Technology Center, one of our sponsors. And particularly, we want to talk about their adult education focus. They offer in-demand career training in under a year, and almost all of their full-time programs are on what they call the Ohio's in-demand jobs list. And they offer training in health technology, skilled trades, public safety, and of course IT, and all of their full-time programs are financial aid eligible for those who qualify, just like regular colleges and universities. You can give them a call at 740-642-1288. I know things are starting to pop for next semester as well, so you want to get in there and get your questions answered. You can also find a lot of information on the web at www.pickawayross.com. That's Pickaway Ross Career and Technology Center. Again, the phone number is 740-642-1288. All right, kind of on the same vein as we talked about the boys' side, we've got some feedback that led to thoughts here for the girls' side, too. First of all, Adina, 6-0 overall, 3-0 in the SVC. Guys, what makes them so elite? Shane?
Well, I think there's two words that are going to come to my mind, and I think one that starts with guard play. Their guard play is off the charts, guys. I mean, it really is. Well, no, it's you know, with Jaden Smith coming back, he plays the game with such a high IQ, and she has a good feel for the game. And then we've highlighted the two freshman guards with Garrison and Williams. It's just the way they play. Not only are they skilled, John, it's their feel for the game. It's their understanding of the game. And then you throw in athletes like the Lovelies. Depth becomes a factor as the second thing, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of – we say a lot of times if you have the one ball handler, you have a chance. If you have two, you can be good. If you have three or more, you can be incredible. Well, and that's what you're kind of in the midst of seeing here. You know what I mean? It's a team that they become such a problem. If you're organized in the half court, you have a chance to guard them. When they get out in secondary break and they play with such IQ and they play with great feel of the game, and they're so unselfish, their willingness to make the extra pass, it's just easy to lose them. Yeah, I know. I'll speak from experience. The other night in our game, even first quarter, even second quarter, it was a mini run in the third quarter and another mini run in the fourth quarter that just kind of got away from us. And it was a lot of secondary break issues, losing 3-point shooters in transition. And again, their willingness to make the extra pass. And then, you know, defensively, they're so connected on the defensive end. Michaela Lovely is a problem. Yeah. She can just, mm-hmm. she just disrupts. John highlighted her on the show in terms of our on pace two. Well, that on pace two might still be on pace two. Yeah, she's an issue. I mean, she's active. She's outstanding. And then, one storyline that gets lost in their start is they played last week without Fogelsong. So, mm-hmm. you know, Ader steps in, Willis gives bench minutes. Curry gives some bench minutes there and there you are. So, I mean, it's impressive. It's you guys know how much I love guard play. Yeah. And I know for preparing for them, it was a challenge because, you know, you do your best to get a couple of them, but it just when they spread you out and they're doing some different things, you're always going to have that one matchup, John. It just kind of makes it tough to keep the ball in front and do some things. But no, they're really good. Coach Day and I go way back. I had the privilege of coaching Coach Day clear back at the beginning of my career, but I was so young that I'm not that much older than them. So it's I'm happy for him, doing a great job there, and it certainly is an outstanding team. I know we haven't seen much of Southeastern, so Southeastern's still obviously a factor, and I know I was proud of the Paint Valley girls in terms of how they played in that game. We certainly had every opportunity in the second and third quarter to take 6, 7, 8 point leads and just couldn't get the ball to go in the hole. But credit to Adina because they were outstanding there in the second half.
John, any further comments on Adina?
Well, I really got a chance to watch them on Tuesday. I watched the D44 media, and I was just impressed with how many different athletes they were throwing out at Huntington. And Jaden Smith that night just got going early. And man, if she's hitting and Garrison's hitting, and man, they're going to be a really tough matchup for anybody guard wise. And then, like you mentioned, they didn't have Fogelsong last week. So you add her size and ability in there, and man, they're going to be a really tough matchup. Obviously, not just this year, but in the future too. Really impressed with what they've done so far. And I'm looking forward to possibly seeing them Tuesday when they travel to Unioto as well.
Guys, we had a few fans give us some feedback asking about the Westfall Unioto finish. Want to comment
on
that?
Well, Don, I'll let you start there because I know you had a chance to watch it.
Yeah, it was it was a game where both teams just battled throughout. Came down to, Unioto a few times in the game. They would get a steal and they'd give it right back. And you couldn't tell who was going to win the game because it was just they seemed very evenly matched. And Unioto had a lot of turnovers in the game. Westfall had a good number of them as well. But it comes down to, late in the game, with a tie game, Unioto had no timeouts left. They looked like they were running the clock down, trying to get the last shot. And Amaris Betts drives to her left, and she finds Avery Miller wide open for three with about 12 seconds left. And, I think a lot of times you say, well, we want to get the last shot, but you don't want to get a bad last shot. So what they got was a great look for their best player, and it rattled out. Mahaley Farmer got the board, kicked it out to Marissa Mullins, and she pushed down court. Unioto made a nice job. I believe it was Alexis Book was in transition, forced her to give it up, but then Gabby Petit was right there and put it in with about 3 seconds left. And like I mentioned, with Unioto not having timeouts left, just they couldn't even get the ball inbounded, and a really good road win for Coach Miller and Westfall.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded like an outstanding game. I tried to go back and watch the fourth quarter there a little bit and catch some of the end. I know Avery's had a terrific start to the year. She's put up some really big numbers. And I guess what jumps out at me about Unioto is, even with their youth and as they're trying to find their combinations, they're getting 9 and 10 kids in the scoring column every game. Mm-hmm. So there's certainly not a lack of athletes there and so forth. And I think it's really time to talk about the year that Gabby Petit's putting together. I mean, mm-hmm. she they're off to, let's see, what is that, a 5-1 start?
5-1, yes.
5-1. And I mean, you know, with their only loss being to Adina, which, as we're finding out, there's no shame in that. Farmer's a versatile kid. We talked about it, Mullins, what she brings. I thought the Kylie Henry scoring 11 points the other night in a 47-45 mm-hmm. win, a kid that's known more for her effort, her 50-50 balls, her defense. You know, John, what maybe a comment on her, you getting a chance to see, because that 11 points is a game-changing type of performance there in a two-point win.
Yeah, and they were struggling to score early. Petit didn't really get going until the second half, like kind of late in the first half. She did a little bit as well, but Kylie was 4-for-4 from the field in the first half, including knocking down a jumper with about, you know, 20 seconds left in the first half to get him tighten that game up. And then she made some free throws late. I was impressed with her ability to, you know, find spots and also knock down the good 15-foot jump shots. And that's huge for Westfall. Because if they can get 4 contributors going, that's going to make them just a really tough matchup for anybody in the league. I was impressed with what I saw from Westfall. They got to tighten up some stuff, obviously. They did some little things. I know Coach Miller had kind of mentioned that as well. It's like they just got to tighten up on certain aspects, and once they do that, man, they're going to be a handful.
You know, Bruce, one thing with all the streaming that people don't get an idea to appreciate on film, with some of these cameras being so far away.
Yeah.
Westfall girls is one of them. People don't understand how big they are. They yes. don't understand how long they are. Like, until you get down on court and you see, okay, Mullen's like 6 foot. Your Farmer's like 5'10". Petit's not short. She's a big guard. Mm-hmm. So they really can stretch out in the half court and do some things. And, you know, the other thing I keep going to, you know, Bruce, think about what John just said about Henry. If she not only scored 11 points, she didn't need 15 shots to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's 4-for-4. I'm telling you, from a coach's perspective, that eats at you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that starts to make you doubt game plan sometimes. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the efficiency of the role players is such an important factor.
Very good. Gentlemen, we had another fan question. This one I'm sure you'll have some thoughts about. How dangerous can Huntington be once they get a chance to start consistently playing a few times per week?
Well, I mean, I don't know if they play once a week or once every 3 weeks. I mean, if number 14's playing, I assume they've got a chance every time. We've talked about it. You know what I mean? Like, look, I'm not saying she's not going to have her bad game. She's going to struggle just like every other kid. But you know that there's an opportunity every time she walks on the court, that if she gets it going that night, you know, she gets it going.
Yeah.
And I think John's talked about it on the preview show. I mean, Katie Hurst has already had, what, a 17-point mm-hmm. game. Carly Dyer had a 20-point game the other night. So when they're getting different people involved, it helps. You know, obviously, Adina did some nice things to really, a lot of team defense, a lot of help, a lot of different things. And, yeah, I don't know. John, I mean, obviously 1,000 points there as well, with basically half her career in front of her. You hope she gets to play full schedule this year for her to really stay on her individual pace and so forth. But to keep it in terms of a team aspect, it's how many different ways she can score. You know, I mean, she got to the line, what was it, 21 times the other night? Made 19 of them.
Wow.
You know, and here's another thing too, Bruce, that's part of it. How the game's called is really important. You know, in that Adina game, you know, she's kind of had some tough whistles here and there. Like, what would happen a couple times, she wouldn't get a call. Mm-hmm. And then a couple times she would be one-on-one and she would shake and bake and she would kind of maybe get hand checked and just go right through it. Well, then she had a layup and they called that one. You know what I'm saying? Like, where she didn't need. So, you know, Adina was just so much better that Adina's team was probably going to do. But I'm talking in that individual matchup a lot of times, whereas in the West Union game the other night, it was called a lot, you know, just a lot different. And it got her to the line. And John, you know how it is when shooters get to the line and they see the ball go in. Well, now all of a sudden she starts to get a little bit more rhythm and go. So, you know, look, I think people listen to the show over the years know that I think she's a tremendous kid, tremendous player. She has great joy in playing the game. And, yeah, I mean, I understand the question. Huntington's been a team that early in the year didn't get to play a lot, and that takes you out of rhythm some. But, yeah, I mean, they're dangerous every time they take the floor because of, you know, she's just such a problem in terms of trying to get that whole entire team under control.
All right. How about
– Sean, anything on that real quick?
Yeah.
No, because what I had listed was also mentioning Carly Dyer and Katie Hirsch. And they both had their big games as well. So, yeah, I think you really nailed it on that.
Can you remember, I mean, obviously Ella here in recent memory, I mean, we're talking about some pretty elite company. We talked about, you know, Logan getting to 1,000 early in the senior year. We're talking mm-hmm. about a kid getting to 1,000, what, three games, four games into her junior yeah. season. That's a big deal.
Right, yeah, because I feel like that's about when Ella did it, too.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think she did it through 2 years, but I know she would have been really close if she did.
Mm. All right. Next question, our last one in the girls segment here. We're looking at depth. Has depth been a factor, and will it be a factor?
I'll go. And, okay. You know, I think it has already. You know, just looking at Adina, I mean – Shane, you mentioned it with, you know, Fuglsang being out, but they were able to just fill in her spot and not really lose anything. You know, and that's something that you have to have good depth to do. You know, I think with like a Unioda where they've, like you mentioned, with 9-10 players scoring at times, you know, that's a team that's going to need their depth to make a difference in the season. I think as, you know, some of the quarantining, the contact tracing stuff comes through, I think depth will play a major role. Maybe not who wins the league, but, you know, in that second through fourth spots, I think it could definitely factor in big time because if you don't have great depth and you're your team gets dinged and you lose two or three starters, then man, you could be in big time trouble. But if you've got 8-9 kids that can really play, you lose two or three starters. Well, yeah, you're not going to have the depth for that game, but you know, maybe you don't lose much like other teams would.
Shane, your thoughts?
Well, and I think there's two. Yeah. I think there's two types of depth that come to my mind, Bruce. One is simply how deep you can go. So when you're able to play 6, 7, 8, the tempo that a team wants to play at sometimes, it can really wear on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a team might have a really talented starting five, and that's why you see sometimes these second and third quarter runs, they become factors because you just run out of gas. You know, or foul trouble hits you. I know I've coached teams before that are only six deep, but there's such a balance and a flexibility in terms of positioning and combinations you can play, John. Sometimes you'll feel like you're 7, 8, 9 deep. Other mm-hmm. times you've been 8 deep where you might only have one point guard, and if that particular kid goes out, you're in trouble. So it's a situation. I think Adina is a great example of this where because they have three different kids that can handle the basketball and run the offense, but then they also have two or three different types of defensive stoppers. So when mm-hmm. they're trying to guard certain kids, the same kid doesn't have to guard them for 32 minutes. You know what I'm saying? They can mix and match it and so forth. So I think that's some things Southeastern girls were trying to establish there early in the year. And then obviously they've been set back a little bit. I think Piketon has added some different pieces. You're going to see them try to do some things with a 6-7 in their rotation. You know, and then there are teams like Uniota that run a lot at you. Zane Trace plays 8, 9, 10 kids where they're still trying to find some combinations too. So there's different types of depth. It's not always how deep you go in terms of number of kids. It's the ability at key positions, just point guard and some different things there, that the versatility of kids being able to go over and, you know, not getting outscored 10-2 in a 3-minute spurt just because you don't have a certain kid on the floor, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Gentlemen, thank you very much for that conversation. It's good stuff. Want to talk about Advanced Services. Another one of our sponsors is Advanced Services Heating, Cooling, and Refrigeration. They look forward to helping you with all of your comfort needs. They're available 24/7 to respond, whether it's installation, repair, or maintenance. And they're Southern Ohio's most trusted provider of heating and cooling services for your home and business. They've been around since 1999. Give them a call at 877-947-4499, or you can get on the web at advancedservicesHVAC.com, where you can schedule a consultation on the website. That's Advanced Services Heating, Cooling, and Refrigeration, another one of our great sponsors on the podcast. Gentlemen, as we head to this third segment here, major segment of the podcast, I just thought it would be good if we kind of look at how much is the change in school that we've encountered here. Different ways, different schedules, flex schedule, remote learning, and so forth. How does that influence basketball in terms of practice and preparation of games? I kind of would actually like both of you have programs that you're participating in, running, and so forth. I just wondered, you know, from somebody that's not around the school, how do you do it? Is it completely changed, or do you still have that period of time in what would be after school to practice?
Shane, you should probably take this since you guys have gone through, like, we've been 5 days a week so far still. So, you know, I can go off of that.
Yeah, I think that's what's unique in our county or our area, Bruce, is the way schools went about the quarantine numbers early on. I think the schools that jumped out and went to a little bit of a flex and some different things, they kind of found an avenue that allowed them to stay in a lot longer. There's other schools that tried as long as they could, and now it's gotten to a point where they've gone to remote and some different things. It's weird. You know, half of your team might be going to school Monday, Tuesday. Half your school might be going Thursday, Friday. They're all remote on Wednesday. And then other schools, it might be, like you said, 5 days in. And, you know, I don't know. I think you try to keep basketball as normal as possible in terms of your practice situation. But I think there are a lot of times when kids are out of school that things take on more of a Saturday feel, mm-hmm. a little bit more of a Christmas break feel. I think kids do a lot better in terms of being in system, in terms of getting up. I think their sleep patterns are better. I think their eating habits are better. These are just my opinions. I might even be better to interview a couple of our student athletes about it. Mm-hmm. But to me, that's kind of where I stand on it in terms of the consistency and so forth, you know. I guess from a teacher standpoint, that's kind of where but John's right. This isn't a one size fits all, because you could pick out about four or five different schools and they would be handling school four or five different ways.
Yeah. I once had a conversation with your brother, Matt, about, you know, would you rather your kids be in school, or, for instance, this was back some time ago, so it was like in reference to a snow day. And I thought, Right. Well, those kids would have more time to perhaps rest or something like that. And he goes, oh, no, I'd rather have them in school, because it's just, you mentioned it, in system. They know that, you know, towards the end of the day, they're going to get into practice, or if they've got a game that night, what they do for that. And it's just kind of, you know, part of the schedule then.
Right. Yeah, I think, and this went back to my first or second year of coaching anything. One game we played up at, I believe it was Circleville for soccer. And I think we played on Labor Day. Kids didn't go to school, and man, it was different. They weren't as sharp, you know. And when you're not locked in during the day in school, or, you know, whatever you're doing, it definitely is a different feeling. And I know for kids, it's, you know, you want to get in a routine. You want to be in that routine as much as possible. And I can see where some of these, you know, some of the different schedules could definitely throw you off. I think with the remote, you can, because I believe schools are trying to keep it kind of as normal school day as possible. You're still going to probably practice a similar time, but it's definitely different, and it's something we haven't really experienced before. So I think for the most part, it's going to be like Shane, you mentioned, with the going to be a lot like Christmas break or a Saturday practice for a lot of these schools.
Change is confusion, and change a lot of times is, I'll go back to Tuesday morning. I mean, our kids were jacked up for Tuesday night. We were supposed to go over to Southeastern or whatever. We got the word probably around 9-10 o'clock in the morning. We were even trying to find another opponent. We were looking around. Well, can this league team play this league team? Can we play this non-league opponent? And so forth. And I was really surprised, Bruce, how well we practiced that day. Mm-hmm. But I was also surprised how down off of that, not necessarily our varsity kids. Our varsity kids maybe a little bit more maturity, handled a little bit better. What I found out was later in the week, I thought our JV kids really fell off. You know what I mean? So the younger kids, I think junior high, JV, some of your younger athletes, maybe a little harder. Maybe varsity John has a little bit more maturity, a little bit more. They understand, hey, it's my job. I got to get kind of ready to play. I got to get locked in here. Or I got to make sure, I get my sleep and so forth. So I don't know. I'm just trying to throw things out there maybe for future discussion, but it may even be something we just need to sit down and talk to some of the athletes about, maybe have them on the show.
Mm-hmm. It's a great idea. It's just different. I mean, it's like everything else, and you have to have some flexibility. But I just wonder I think that's a good idea. Talk to some kids and see whether they'd rather play at night, after not having been in class that day, or would they rather just go to school and be in class? But it's obviously a confusing time, and like we said several times, we've got to be flexible and thankful that we're at least playing some. I didn't know that we would be able to continue this like we have, and I'm thankful for that.
Right.
Well, gentlemen, talked a lot about basketball tonight, both boys and girls, and then the flexible scheduling and so forth. And if we've hit folks on anything that you'd like to provide some input for, you may do so by contacting these gentlemen. First, for John Bruce, you want to email him. You do so at jbruce1018@yahoo.com, and he's available on Twitter at Coconut Wall Papa. His handle is Coconut Wall Papa. And on Shane, he can be reached by email at admin1@svcsportzone.com and on Twitter at SVC Sports Zone. Facebook, he maintains two profiles, Shane Combs SVC Sports Zone and svcsportzone.com. And I might mention, when these guys are on Twitter and they're doing some SVC Sports Talk business, they will do so using the hashtag SVC Sports Talk. How convenient. You can also call DBK Media Services, leave us a voicemail, 740-569-3254. And as always, we ask that you share our information on Facebook, and if you can on Twitter, you can retweet or at least favorite it as well. If you're listening on iTunes, how about a good review or a great rating? So that kind of brings us down to the last little segment here. What might we have missed, gentlemen? John, you have anything?
We didn't talk about how awesome it was.
Okay. We have 20 seconds if you want to do that.
No, okay. No, it's okay.
All right. Shane?
Maybe next time.
Shane? Anything?
I was looking down through my notes here. I hope we gave the proper due, to Logan Ben and Allison Basie, because what they've done, that's really, really neat. And we'll follow them and their progress. I think we mentioned I had a note down here, John, about Tyler Shipley. He's scoring the basketball a little bit, because I really wondered from the guard play, the consistency of Westfall. Obviously, they had a pretty tough draw to start the league season there in terms of schedule. Brody Fuller, I thought, shot the ball well against Unioto the other night. Obviously, Little had a terrific weekend. And then over on the girls' side, let me make sure I just didn't miss anyone here. I think we talked about Avery Miller. Again, we talked a lot about Adina's collective talent, which is important. But I think Emma Garrison, her 20 points, three threes against Paint Valley, scored 15 in the second half, had 12 rebounds. I mean, really, really a terrific player. Again, I can't say enough about it. It's not, it's how good of basketball players these kids are. That's what's impressive. And then, you know, I think we talked about Michaela Lovely's defense, just to put 6 steals and 2 charges taken in that Huntington game jumped out at me, John. So just some things sometimes that, you know, I see certain stats that I kind of want to mention on the show that maybe I forget. That's why I kind of like doing that at the end. But overall, I think we hit on most things this week, Bruce. A good show. And I think the more and more we get into this, we'll get some matches. Hopefully we'll get a couple of our teams back this week, and hopefully we can put together a good clean week and get some games in.
Let's keep our fingers crossed.
Well, guys, on that note, if you don't have anything else, again, congratulations, Coach Kello. Make sure you're checking out the website. Like I said, I want to make sure you understand we have a JV page up, a junior high page up. We cover all those. We try to get some wrestling stuff up there. So make sure you're checking the website just about every night throughout the winter. You know, we have something new there each and every evening. So as always, we'll try to do our best to keep it 100% SBC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com. Join us next time for SVC Sports Talk and visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.